One of the things that Adam Gilchrist was talking about to Kina this morning in his Worldview report at around 20 to 8 was a study in America where researchers found striking evidence of chronic traumatic encephalopathy in 110 of the 111 donated brains of players who played in the National Football League. And CTE, to give it its abbreviation, causes symptoms including memory loss, vertigo, depression, dementia. Problems can crop up after many years after a player's career has ended. And you hear this, you hear about 110 out of 111. And these are cadavers which have been donated to medical science by the families of the deceased footballers. And you think about the levels of protection that the American football player has in terms of padding and helmets and so on. And you go, wow, if that's the level of chronic brain disease as a result of collisions in the sport, when you have that much protection, what would it be like for rugby? Dr. John Patricios, concussion advisor for South Africa and World Rugby. John, good afternoon. How much of a link is there between this study and what might be happening on rugby fields across South Africa?
Good afternoon, John, to you and your listeners. Well, the honest answer to that is we don't know. So this is a very interesting pattern that's been observed in brains of deceased American footballers. So we know that this pattern exists. It's not the first study to show that. And it really refers to a very distinct pattern of protein deposition, type of protein called tau protein, which is deposited in a very specific sort of pattern in these brains, deep in some of the crevices of the brain and particularly around some of the blood vessels. So it seems to be somewhat distinct from other pathologies which have been described before. And as you mentioned, these are deceased footballers' brains have been donated to science. What we don't know is really what happens from the time they play football or take collisions to the time that their brains are examined by the neuropathologist.
There does seem to be some evidence that the longer they had played football, the worse the damage to the brain.
So that's what this study seems to indicate,
yes,
that the more times that the more games they played, and we assume the more collisions they took, that the greater the evidence for this pattern of pathological change in the brain. And, you know, they are matching these changes to symptoms which were reported while these athletes were alive, including those resembling dementia, depression, etc. So we still have a gulf between what's happening when the players are on the field and what might be causing this pattern and what's happening on the pathologist slide. And we've got to be very careful about bridging that in American football, let alone transferring that to rugby. So there's no question that this is a hot topic at the moment. It's something that really is at the forefront of our minds. But it comes under a broader banner of mental health issues in athletes. And I think this is something which we're paying a lot more attention to.
So,
I would also sorry.
You probably, or not you personally, but medical scientists interested in this field, probably haven't had access to too many brains of rugby players who've died some years
exactly
after their career has finished. So it's difficult to know.
Correct.
Whether, you know.
So there's a handful, to be honest, of rugby players whose brains have been examined, and there are a couple of projects starting around the world now to encourage rugby players, ex-rugby players, to when they do die, to donate their brains to medical science, so we can examine this process. You know, nevertheless, whatever the findings are, we have recognized that we've probably underdiagnosed and undertreated conditions such as concussion for some time in all collision sports. So the other thing I'd say is that these brains that are being examined were firstly from American footballers who for years have actually used their heads as a weapon in terms of spear tackling. You mentioned the headgear, etc. You know, that is some protection, but it's also a negative influence in terms of the weight that carries and also the way it's used as a weapon. So for years, the rules around concussion, around tackling in American football have been quite counterproductive to protecting the brain. And probably because we weren't recognizing these conditions, players with concussions were playing on and on and again, game after game, without allowing their brains to recover. And this may well be a manifestation of what was happening over those years. We've certainly now taken a step forward, and we've recognized that any symptoms associated with brain injury need to be taken very, very seriously. Yes, and rugby in particular has very strict guidelines.
Are they strict enough? That's where I want to go to. Are players sent off the field for the concussion test enough times, or are there times when maybe you're watching a game of rugby and you see a collision and you think to yourself, that player should be tested for concussion? Are those tests sufficiently thorough? Is the gap between concussion being diagnosed and the player being allowed to return to active contact on the rugby field long enough?
So interestingly, I've just come back from a meeting in Dublin where we had a number of football codes represented, rugby union, rugby league, Australian rules, football, NFL, etc. And we discussed our protocols and compared them. And what I will say about rugby is, firstly, it's taking a lead in this in terms of promoting an approach to head injury management that is appropriate and conservative, and also that our protocols are the most robust they've been in decades or ever, actually. But having said that, they're certainly not foolproof, and we've all seen cases on television where players seem to have been affected by the impact that they've taken and perhaps have stayed on longer than they should have. So mistakes have been made, but those mistakes are probably between 6 and 12%, according to our statistics, of players who shouldn't be on the field, whereas 5 years ago the figure was 56% of players who took an impact which caused a concussion were left on the field. So that has drastically reduced.
Yeah.
And so it's not foolproof, but the safeguards are there. I think where we have to be even more careful is in the amateur game, where you don't have those protocols, you don't have video review, you don't have medics on the side of the field. And that's where the lay public really has to play a role. The coach has to play a role. A referee has to play a role. So South African Rugby has this protocol or this project called BoxSmart. Now, BoxSmart is a project that aims to educate referees and coaches, specifically them, because they're the closest to the players and they will always be either at a training session or there during a match. And they need to be able to recognize what we say, recognize and remove, recognize the symptoms and signs of concussion and make sure that player goes off the field, doesn't come back for the rest of that day and seeks appropriate medical attention. So we focus a lot of our attention on the 5% of professional players, but what about the 95% who don't have the scrutiny that the professional does?
That's a very, very good point to make. Thank you so much, Dr. John Patricios, concussion advisor for South Africa and World Rugby.